We are so glad you've tuned into Family Talk here today as we move deeper into this brand new year of 2013. I'm Lou Ann Crane here with Ryan Dobson, and our host is psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson. And Ryan, did you make some resolutions this year? Or better yet, have you broken those New Year's resolutions yet?
Oh, Lou Ann, I don't do the New Year's resolutions anymore, really. I kind of do this year's goals, because when the resolutions... My list was always too long.
Yep.
It was always a disappointment. But that's what we're going to be talking about today specifically. As we wanted to wait till we were a little bit deeper into 2013, because I think there's a lot of people that have already broken resolutions. They're looking at it going, well, I've broken them. I might as well quit. And I don't want you to feel that way.
That's right.
I want to change that. Turn
and
it around.
We rest on that promise that the Lord's mercies are new every morning. But... as you said, Ryan, we really do need to set those goals. I appreciate the way that you said that, because we know Psalm 90:12 instructs us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Or, you know, a verse that has been very convicting to me lately, Ryan, is the one in Ephesians that says, make the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. So today we'll address that whole area of goal setting and decision making.
And as for goal setting, that's why my dad's not here with us today. He's working tirelessly to finish his upcoming Building a Family Legacy film series, and he is so focused on getting that done.
Well, he is quite a role model for all of us, that's for sure. But today we've invited another expert on this issue to help us, especially to help men learn how to make great decisions and become more disciplined. I'm speaking of our good friend, Mr. Bill Farrell. Welcome, Bill.
Thanks, Luann. Thanks, Ryan. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you here.
Yeah. You're not going to ask me about resolutions, right?
Oh, yeah. We want you to fess up right here on national radio.
Yep. Yes. Time to spill it all out. Well, I know our listeners are familiar with your name because you've been here with your wife, Pam. You are very popular authors and speakers. You've written a number of books together. We've had you on the program. We talked about one of your books, Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti, Red Hot Monogamy. That was a great program.
I noticed your voice went up on that one.
Yeah. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Back to being 13 again. But you're here today to talk to men in our audience.
Yes.
You've got a new book out now called The 10 Best Decisions a Man Can Make. And this whole concept of decision-making and being decisive is fascinating. And did this start because of a conversation you had with your dad?
Yeah, you know, so much of what we get passionate about in life starts out of our personal frustration. My dad loved his work. Like, my dad used to come home and say, I can't believe they pay me to do this. And he worked in the aerospace industry, designed rocket engines. So, you know, people ask me, so what is your dad, a rocket scientist? Well,
yes, he actually is.
And he treated it like it was going to play. He just loved it. And so part of the legacy in my life is you need to look for work that you love to do.
Yeah.
So I was a young college student trying to decide what should I major in, what direction should I go with my education. And I thought, boy, the person to ask is my dad, because he's done it.
Sure.
So I went to my dad and I said, Dad, I have a question for you. Like, how does a man figure out what he should do for a career and what he should pursue for education? And with anticipation, I'm waiting for the answer. I'm thinking, this could be one of those golden moments with my dad. And he said, well, Bill, I'm not very good at talking about this kind of stuff, but whatever you decide, I'll support.
Really?
And I knew it wasn't true. Because I had a list of things I knew my dad wouldn't say yes to. Like, if I went to my dad and said, you know, Dad, there's a lot of money in dealing drugs. What do you think?
Of course.
I knew he would be, because my dad has this high sense of morality. And so I realized my dad couldn't put in words what he had done in his life.
What do you think was holding him back? You know, he said, I'm not very good at this. When you think, well, you are. I've watched you. You're really good at it. You've practiced it in your own life. You love your work. What was holding him back from being able to describe that?
I think a couple things. One, his dad died when he was pretty young. And so during the same period of time we were talking about, like the phase of life I was going through, his dad wasn't there when he went through that phase of life.
Wow.
And so he didn't have a role model of how you interact on these kinds of things with your dad. So when I had that conversation with my dad, it just set this frustration in my heart, and it stuck with me. You know, not all the experiences we have as kids stick with us, but a few of them do. And that one just stuck with me. And when I became a dad, I said, when my kids ask me that question, I'm going to be ready.
Definitely.
I'm going to figure out how to answer that question. And it started a personal path for me on how to do that. Mm-hmm. So I did two things. I started reading books about how to grow as a man. And I went and asked men that looked like they knew what they were doing.
Oh, wow.
Because I didn't just want theory. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know how real men did this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Were you unusual? Because that really strikes me as incredibly mature to actually seek out an older man like that. I don't know if I know too many men in their 20s who literally would say, I'm not sure I know how to do this thing. I'm going to go find somebody.
When I look back, it appears it was a little unusual. But I don't want you to give me too much credit, because it wasn't out of a sense of maturity. It wasn't out of a sense of planning. It was out of a sense of frustration and desperation.
Hmm. Yeah. I got to disagree with you, Bill. I think it was mature. You know, that's a very, very forward-thinking, idea for a kid that's 21. And I also have to say, I think 21-year-olds are in crisis right now. You know, we've got guys who are told you can't make decisions and you're not capable of making decisions, you are being decisive in, I'm going to do something about this.
Well, you say men are called to be decisive. Mm-hmm. So let's take that and apply that a little bit, Bill. Okay, we're speaking to a man who says, I'm not decisive or I don't know how to start down this path. Okay, right now, the beginning of 2013, they maybe have some major decisions they need to make, okay? They have no idea where to start, how to determine making the best decision, and they just feel lost. You were kind of at that point.
Yes.
So you've been there. How did you go through that experience?
Well, first of all, let me say, some people listening to this show, they have instincts for decision making. They grew up around good decision makers. They saw it in action. They've developed instincts for it.
I'm raising my hand.
Yes,
yeah.
He did.
Yeah. And if you have the instincts, utilize them. I mean, that is the goal, is that the next generation will be better than us. Mm-hmm. So for those that have the instincts, like, don't get bogged down in going back to square one and learning the skill. But decision-making is just a skill. It isn't that some people were born with the ability and some weren't. It's a skill that everybody can learn. Chances are most people never were taught how to develop the skill.
Mm-hmm.
So in the book, I give people tests. So anytime you're faced with a decision, there are tests you can apply to this decision. And they start very simple, and then they move to more complex. So the first test is the obvious test. It's one question. Is this decision so obvious I'm wasting time thinking about it?
Such as?
Should I brush my teeth every day?
Oh.
Okay.
The answer is yes. There's some biblical areas. Like, there are some things God just said very, very clearly. There are some things in life he wants us to figure out, but there are some things he just very clearly said. So if we were to ask the question, is it a good idea to read your Bible on a regular basis?
Yes.
Yes. Is it a good idea to attend church where you fellowship with other believers and worship together?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Should you be kind to your spouse if you're married?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, those are just obvious decisions. And when people don't do the obvious decisions, it steals energy from the decision-making process.
Hmm.
The next one is what I call the wisdom test. And it's another set of questions, but they're pretty personal questions. So they're questions such as, does this decision line up with what I know is true about God?
Hmm.
Does this line up with my convictions in life? Do the people I respect most in life agree with this decision? And have I asked them? Would I give this advice to my best friend? When we start to ask those kinds of questions, if we get it yes, 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 yes to all of those questions, that starts to become an obvious decision.
Yeah.
The issue comes when you have some yeses and some nos.
Well, then it comes down to priorities.
It moves to the next one, which the priority test, it's a slant on a process a lot of people have heard about. Because the priority test, it's for a more complex decision. And the way it works is the first step is you write down your decision in a positive way. There was a decision that we had to make. I was working in Bakersfield, California as a youth pastor, and I had an opportunity to go to a church in San Diego and be the lead pastor. So I wrote down the decision, should I move to San Diego and become the lead pastor? So something I would say yes to. If I did say yes, I'd be positive about it.
Okay.
And then you make two lists. The first list is all the reasons I should say yes to this decision. Second list is all the reasons I should say no to this decision. And you want to make it as complete a list as you can. Like ask friends, ask advisors, get reasons on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting when I wrote the list was actually very lopsided. I only had 3 reasons for saying yes, and I had 12 reasons for saying no.
Wow.
Because the church itself was awkward in a lot of ways. And so the key to this process is to prioritize both sides. So I took all the reasons for saying, well, the two reasons for saying yes and all the reasons for saying no, and I gave them either A, B, or C. A means this is a compelling reason. I need to pay attention to this one.
Okay.
B is a supportive reason. It's not strong enough to stand on its own, but it gives support to an A reason. C are things I came up with because I'm creative. Well, what happened when I went through the priority process? Everything on the reason to say no was a B. Mm. The only A on the list was Pam and I felt called to this church. Mm. And it simplified the decision for us. But all of the things that we knew were going to be difficult, our perspective changed on it. We went, yeah, those are going to be challenges, but look at this. God's calling us here. Mm-hmm. We can work through this. Every once in a while in life, you're going to face something that's truly new. Like you actually don't have any experience in this. You don't have any real instinct at all on what to do with it. And it's because your thinking is narrower than the solution. And you need a way to broaden out your thinking. And with that, it's a brainstorm test. The first thing you want to do is make a brainstorm list of every possible solution you can come up with, whether it's ridiculous, whether you know you'd never do it. And you want to go ask people, so how would you approach this? And you want to get as many ideas on paper as you possibly can. It's a brainstorm list. Mm. So you don't evaluate it. You don't wonder whether it can happen because you're trying to widen your thinking the solution probably exists outside of your current life experience.
Let's put that into an example. Right now, the economy is kind of tough. People are concerned about jobs. Maybe there's a guy thinking, should I start my own business?
Right.
So you would have him go through those steps. Obvious, okay, he should provide for his family.
Well, let's just jump by it because it's probably not. If it was obvious, he'd be doing it.
Okay.
And if it was in his life experience, he'd get after it because men are emotional about money. So if there's a way to make money, they're in.
Okay.
So let's just jump to the brainstorm.
Okay.
I would tell that man, I want you to write down every possible way you can think of to make money. And if you're thinking about starting a business, I want you to write down every possible business you can think of that has any interest to you whatsoever.
Hmm.
And they start the brainstorming process. And in the process, they find something that, you know, I never thought about that, but that's interesting.
Yeah.
And I've seen men go from, like a good friend of mine started off as a cabinet maker. While he was doing cabinet making, he started installing computers into some of the amusement cabinets that he was building for amusement parks. That created a whole new interest in computers, and he's now got a business in the computer field, which isn't going away anytime soon.
Yeah.
And so in the process, he discovered a whole new area of interest. And as men, sometimes we have to do that because what we used to be able to do may not exist anymore.
Mm-hmm. When a man has problems being decisive in the home, what problems does that cause in marriage? Mm-hmm. You're traveling a lot, speaking not only to college students and singles, but also to married couples. Is decision making, is it hurting marriages, or is it kind of one of the lesser problems? Well,
let me go back to the comment I made. Emotions follow decisions. So couples who are good at making decisions have a really good emotional environment in their relationship. Couples who are not good at decisions create emotional turmoil. So if there's a decision, like if I role play with you, Lynn, if there's a decision we should make together and I make it for us, I disrupt the emotional environment in our relationship.
Hmm.
If you and I sit down together, make unhealthy decisions together, we're going to create emotional turmoil in our relationship. If we don't divide up responsibility, so I don't know what you're supposed to decide, I don't know what I'm supposed to decide, and we just randomly choose, we're going to create more emotional turmoil. So couples that don't have some plan for making decisions, they just create all this emotional turmoil until one day they wake up and they don't like the environment.
You know, that's interesting, though, because I talk to high school kids and college kids throughout the summer because I'm speaking at camps.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the complaints I get from girls is with the guys they date. They wait to the last minute. They feel that they were the last item on their list on a Friday night. Well, everything else fell apart. I might as well call you. And that doesn't make you feel good.
Right.
And then he'll show up at the door and go, what do you want to do? Putting the pressure back on her. I feel like I'm bashing men, and I so don't want to do that. What I want to say is you can do this. It's just taking those first steps.
Well, and the other thing we need to put in the mix, Ryan, is that scenario you just described.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is more important to a young man than impressing a young lady? And that is such a big thing for most guys. Like, again, I can go back to my high school years. I got no training in how to do this. Zero. And everything felt new. Everything felt awkward. And everything was a guess. And so when you factor in that most guys like to succeed,
yeah,
they'll hold back because if I go, hey, we should do this, and she says, no, that's dumb.
Ouch.
That's like a wound for a guy, a young guy.
Yeah.
So he plays it safe, and he's looking for clues. And so the first thing we've got to tell him is, like, kind of laugh about this a little bit. This is a big deal to you, and she's important to you. And the reason why you're hesitating is not because you don't want to do well at this. It's too important to you.
Mm-hmm.
So laugh this off a little bit. And then I would say not so much to the guy, but the people who have influence in his life. Like, it really is up to the rest of us who are youth leaders, who are men in the church, who are oftentimes uncles because so many dads aren't around mm-hmm. during this time, even older brothers. Like, I'm watching this with my sons because my two older sons, they're 4 and 6 years older than their younger brother.
Mm.
And so they're reaching back and kind of helping him figure out wow. some of how to interact with girls and how to make decisions about his life. And if we can get along some of these guys.
Yeah.
And say, hey Ryan, you got a date coming up, right?
Indeed.
Let me school you up on how to do this.
Hmm.
And if an older guy tells a younger guy, hey, make sure you call her 4 days ahead of time. Put together a plan. Don't worry about if it's a great plan. Just put together a plan.
Sure.
And if you need to evaluate the plan, come talk to me. I'll help you evaluate that plan.
Bill, I want to just still speak to that skeptic out there.
Please do.
I was very intrigued with a list you included in your book of excuses mm-hmm. that we make for not setting goals or not making decisions. Let me run through some of these because I was kind of convicted on some of these myself, even though your book is to men, okay? And some of these sound very spiritual, okay? Ugh. It's not possible to see the future, so I'm just going to take what today gives me. Or, I don't think we should try to plan out our whole lives. That's God's job. Mm-hmm. Or, I think it's presumptuous to set goals. It feels like I'm telling God what to do. Mm-hmm. And then here's my personal favorite. I don't need to set goals. My wife will tell me what to do. Are these excuses that you hear?
Well, none of these were unique to me. These are all things I've been told. And I think they're pretty common.
Hmm.
And we don't want to be too hard on people because a lot of these, what we call excuses in the book, they come from a sincere place. I mean, we really don't want to get in God's way.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to get into a place where we have just done our own thing and now God has to correct us. But at the same time, God's not looking for passive participants.
Yeah.
You know, life's an adventure. And we all love relationships when there's full involvement, full activity. And like I now have grandkids. I don't want to go to my grandkids' house and have them just sit on the couch going, well, we're just going to sit here till you decide what you want us to do.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I love it when they come up with ideas. I love it when they want to play games. I love it when they start dreaming. Even if I know they can't be done. I love the interactive nature of that relationship. And I know God loves that kind of interaction also. So even when we don't have the right ideas, God wants to hear our ideas.
Yeah.
And God wants to steer us, not drag us. So he wants us in motion so he can steer us to his will rather than having to grab us by the hand and just drag us into opportunities.
Sure.
Because it's more fun to lead people than it is to force them to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And it is our job to make plans. The Bible is very clear about it. In his heart, a man makes plans, but the Lord directs his steps.
Hmm.
So that's the way it's supposed to be. We're supposed to be planners. We're supposed to be dreamers. We're supposed to set goals. We're supposed to take risks and say, you know what? God hasn't told me not to do this, so I'm going to take a run at it and see what happens with the attitude of, God, at any point, if you want to steer me, feel free. Until you steer me, I'm heading for that goal.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of freedom in that. And again, God's not out to punish us as we're trying to grow. He's cheering us on. And yes, we're going to make mistakes along the way. At times, you're going to get off the path. God's more than capable of getting you back on. If you take an aggressive step, say, you know what, I have a brain, I have an imagination, I have desires in my heart that are good that I want to accomplish in life. So I'm going to take steps toward those, but I'm going to give God freedom at any point to steer my life.
Mm.
You put those two things together, And you can raise your decision-making skill.
Bill, we've been talking a lot about the practical application of, you know, like jobs or career decisions, that kind of thing. We're getting down to the end of our program here, and I just want to ask you to address a couple of things that are a little more universal. The whole concept of being a man of principle, having convictions and integrity, there are some key components to that that just supersede anything. I don't really care if you're a cabinet maker, if you're a railroad engineer, or if you're, you know, a rocket scientist. Mm-hmm. Those qualities of character and principle are huge. And just summarize a few of those for us here in the close.
Well, the reason why I put it in the book is as men, we're subject to being pragmatic, which means I'm going to do what works in this situation. I'm going to do what works to move me ahead in my career. I'm going to do what works to capture my wife's heart. And a lot of men, once they capture her heart, they say, okay, I'm done with that one, they move on. And they're pragmatic rather than character driven. And the problem with that is that as men, people are watching our lives. I don't care who you are. I don't care how simple you think you are, whether you think you're a leader or not. There's somebody watching your life. And they are going to model their behavior after what they see in you. And when you run by convictions, so if you think telling the truth is important, you don't just do it because it gets you somewhere. You tell the truth because you think it's important to tell the truth. If you have moral convictions because you believe they're right. And we know all men struggle in this area because God gave us this powerful passion in our soul. It's fueled by testosterone. And when that passion is focused, it's awesome to watch in action because it builds things, it builds businesses, it fuels ministry. When that passion gets out of focus, it just creates damage. Mm. And so if we have moral conviction just because it's right, we do what's right because it's right. If we keep commitments because we made the commitment, that's one of the legacies my dad gave me also. My dad was in a difficult marriage. And I asked him one day, I said, Dad, why do you stay at this thing? He said, well, I stood in front of a group of people. I said this was for a lifetime and it was for better or worse. And I meant it.
Wow.
And again, if that's a conviction in our heart, we do it when it's easy and convenient and we do it when it's difficult and it's costly. If it's not a conviction, we will adjust it for pragmatic reasons. And what people want to see in us is that we stood for something.
That's right.
And that we held on to it even when it was difficult. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know my kids are not at all impressed that I'm an author. They couldn't tell you how many books my wife and I have written. They don't talk about our seminars. They don't talk about any of that. What they thank me for is loving their mom. Hmm.
That's the most important thing, too. It really is.
It obviously is to them.
Mm-hmm. And that is a great place to wind it up. My goodness. I just think there's so many men listening who think, I haven't hit the mark. I'm not the superstar. I may even be 50, 60, 70 years old, and I'm still not really sure, did I hit the sweet spot? You know, the whole midlife crisis thing. Did I really accomplish and leave that legacy like your dad is talking about so much, Ryan? But, Bill, this reminder that that's what it comes down to. Was I faithful to my wife? Was I there for my kids? Was I loving the Lord with all of my heart? Doesn't get any better than that.
And studies are showing that the most influential decades of our life are our 50s and 60s.
Really?
They aren't the most productive because we have a lot more energy when we're younger. But our influence gels in our 50s and 60s, even with pain in our memory. Because all of that gives us life experience that gives us real advice to give to the next generation. So even the guys that are frustrated, feel like they didn't hit it, you're entering your most influential years. And this could be the sweet spot God's been preparing you for decades.
Bill, we appreciate you coming here. Mm-hmm. Anytime you're in the area, come visit us.
Thanks, Ryan. Always good.
Good. And for our listeners who want to learn more from the advice Bill shares for men who want to be decisive and motivated, we'll make sure to make his book available at drjamesdobson.org. The title again is The 10 Best Decisions a Man Can Make.
And Ryan, actually, I would encourage the women listening to get a copy of that and give it to the man in their life, maybe even with a CD copy of this discussion. Again, you can find both of those at drjamesdobson.org.
Also, there we'll have links to Bill and Pam Farrell's website where you can learn more about their other books or find out if they'll be speaking in your area.
And before we go, we definitely want to stop and thank those of you who have stepped forward at the end of 2012 to help us financially. We talked a little bit today about goal setting. Well, here at Family Talk, we've set a few ourselves. We are aiming to bring Dr. James Dobson's 35 years of advice and help to 10 million families in the next 1,000 days.
Learn more about our 1,000 Days of Impact and how you can join in when you're at drjamesdobson.org or by calling us 877-732-6825. Again, 877-732-6825.
Thanks so much for being with us today, and we hope you'll make it a goal to join us each and every day for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.
Hello, everyone. This is James Dobson with Family Talk. You know, 35 years ago, San Antonio hosted our first Building a Family Legacy conference, preserved in a video series eventually seen by 80 million people around the world. Join me as I return to San Antonio for a special free one-day event featuring a fresh look at timeless biblical principles for raising children. For more information, go to buildingafamilylegacy.com.